creating this combat trauma model that you create, one of the key statements in it that has always appealed to me was you say recovery is a sequential resolution of the combat trauma events. And in this space, for me, recovery meaning healing. And to offer a sequential, like I keep calling it a recipe to heal, but like these step-by-step things, and individually their importance, but also when you combine it, is a literal recipe for recovery. Yeah. So I was curious if you could talk about how you figured that out.
Part of it was, well, I was reading basis of the work I was doing in that first master's program when I was looking at PTSD. He was an anthropologist, and so he looked at things in terms of the community and the individual. It wasn't one or the other. And that really intrigued me because I could understand better the relationship between the most fundamental cultural concepts and ideas that we had as Americans, and could then look at that and say, well, what happened when we went to Vietnam? And what happened was that the cultural context for meaning and purpose in our lives was shattered. It was gone because the world didn't, that world turned out, you know, Walt Disney's version. It wasn't the way the world really, really worked. So I had the concept of the relationship between the individual and the culture, because we knew we had been culturally displaced. We came back to the world and we didn't belong here anymore. And so cultural displacement was one of the very first things that struck me as part of the trauma of PTSD that was not being talked about. Yeah, everybody got the brain damage and everybody got, you know, the PTSD. It all of a sudden had a life of its own. But doctors don't talk about spirituality. They don't talk about religion. It's not part of their world. It's not, no matter what they may think, the medical culture does not universally accept those ideas. You got to have them if you're going to treat people for trauma. You just have, because once you learn any connection to meaning and purpose in your life, you'll wander till you get real tired and then you commit suicide. And that's how that works. And that's what certainly was working back when we were developing the model. That was a major impetus, was we had to keep our people from killing themselves. So I had started writing, I guess, about a year before I got to Anchorage to the vet center. But the second half of the book was written as we were going through the combat debriefing models with other veterans, because it gave me a chance to get feedback from other people that I trusted about was the way I was thinking about this match their experience. And so we developed it together, and we didn't change a whole lot of things, but we found nuances that needed to be expanded. Some ideas that were not familiar to some of the veterans that were to the other. And so we started giving language to those kinds of things. For example, whether you were a chopper gunner or a chopper pilot versus a grunt on the ground, those were two real different wars. They wound up the same place with PTSD, but, and the medics, geez, the medics were absolutely the most difficult people to bring home. And they are, I suspect they always will be, because it's personal for them when they lose somebody. And not only is the loss personal, but the guilt of not being able to save that person. They live with that for the rest of their life until the healing occurs. So going through the model and saying, that's where we are tonight. And then it wasn't tell me about your experience so much. It was, does this sound right to you? Is how does your experience relate to this, or is it different? And everybody got to talk. And those sessions sometimes would go on for, you know, we'd convene at 7. It was not unusual to get out of there at 1 or 1:30 in the morning. I mean, people were that invested in, number one, learning, but number two, they were not going to leave any of their people in that room who were still in pain. Everybody was going to walk out of there, and it may have been really difficult for some of them, but they weren't going to leave there in pain. They were going to leave there surrounded by the love. That's how we.
Well, I know that originally what brought me your way, you know, was the idea of there being love as the healing answer, you know, to all of us. And it's one of those things where, you know, you hear it and you think, yeah, it can't be that simple, but it is that simple. But then you come down to, well, what does that mean? And what does that look like? And I think especially when you're working with military people who are very regimented and used to following, you know, orders and writing up op orders and whatnot, and to be talking these big concepts of soul wounds or moral injury or existential God or spirituality and healing, something like the word healing, I think feels so far away for people. And like, that's for other people. That's not for me. And so what I loved so much about finding you, like all those years ago, which I guess now has been like, gosh, like 15 years ago or something, was that you validated each experience. And that they all, you know, had pain in different ways and different experiences in different situations. And you were one of the first people I knew to validate the military spouse and to explain and help in terms of becoming a translator. Like, you were my translator for years to figure out what I needed, you know, in working with David and when he came home and what I needed to do and what had happened to him. Yeah. But also what had happened to me, and how do we make those meet again? And I mean, you were a key person in getting us through multiple deployments, like trying to figure out what that meant and how to come together and then separate, knowing that there would be hope after. Yeah. So this tangible, easy to do, small moments is what you offer and help people build on. And so I guess, David, I wanted to ask you, because, you know, it's like talking about this recipe for recovery, you know, for healing. What are your thoughts about that process, having these tangible things to do and like a weekly, here's what you try this week in order to move toward rebuilding trust, or this is what you can do, you know, to work on the feeling tones, which is something I'm sure we'll get into at a different point. But what has it been like for you to essentially follow an order on how to heal?
A sequence, right?
Yeah,
it was very helpful. Now, I didn't understand what was going to be happening or what was like the, you know, the writing something down or something, you know, doing something nice or, you know, writing a love note or whatever, those things. That's what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was very helpful to have those assignments, because I can't speak for everybody, like all veterans, but for me, it was really helpful because I could see a tangible outcome or see and touch something that is there. Like, I fight with my own self in my head all the time, because I can't put my actual hands on what I'm thinking or what I want to do, like how I want to treat you. You know, I can't put my hands on that, and I can't make that happen. So it's difficult for me with the other things, like the assignments or the do this for every day for this week, were very helpful, and that's why.
Well, I feel like one of the things that opened you up to even trying, because that's the thing, right, is like, how do you get people to the point of even trying this concept or this method or idea? But having somebody explain literally what happened to you in boot camp, because, you know, I knew you, met you well after that. You know, you were already in the reserves, so I don't know the David before the Army or before boot camp or, you know, anything like that. And so to watch Ken telling you what happened to your brain and why that technique works and why boot camp is so formative in terms of moving you from one culture to another, I think that was the moment where I saw you really engage, is to hear somebody tell you what you felt, but you never had words for. So Ken, I was curious if you would spend a few moments talking about that, like the enculturation and the boot camp experience and what that does, you know, moving. So, and I know that's a huge conversation, but just like stepping into that a little bit of how that happened.
Yeah, you're talking about it now or talk about it in the series that we're going to do?
Yeah, like just for a few minutes now, because I'm thinking about what it means as we put this out there for people to even have a clue who we are or why this is something we care about. And I've been thinking about what is it that makes this work? And it's that you build that trust immediately by validating a warrior that, yes, they did flip a switch. And I think for when you tell someone and explain, you flipped a switch, this is how, this is why it worked, then there's a belief that they can flip it back.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. The problem then becomes, if I flip the switch back, does that mean that I'm running out on my people? And that's the single biggest hurdle coming home, is to make sure that particularly the people they lost, that those bonds stay connected and they know they always will be there, but they'll be there in a kind and loving way, not in a hurtful, sorrowful way. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. This is just so big.